Okay, hello Morro Bay, and welcome to the Wednesday, May 23rd, 2012, special meeting of the Public Works Advisory Board. Tonight we have a meeting that we're going to be discussing various items, and then our next item, just to let you know, our next meeting will be on June 21st, so it'll be, instead of bi-monthly, it'll be 1 month. So before we get started, we do have a quorum here. Everybody is in attendance, and could we have a moment of silence, please? Okay. Next item, we have any announcements or presentations. Would anybody like to public comment, approach the mic, comment? Oh, there we go. Please come on up and state your. Would you like to speak now, or would you like to speak later during, when we talk about transit? It depends on you.
It's about transit.
Okay, and the transit is going to be the
okay, I'll talk
old
now.
Business. I mean, it's up to you. I don't know if you were going to stick around.
Okay, yeah, but I'll talk now. All right, let me put these up.
If we could get the projector going. And
good
please, please state your name.
Susan McDonnell, General Manager, Morro Bay Transit and Trolley. So I wanted to start out with just giving a little background. Today I had a senior rider training. It's the third one that I've offered. Today's was at the community center. Big success. Everyone was real happy. I can fill the bus with about 10 people, and I set a time and had a sign-up sheet, and it was full. And everyone today enjoyed their ride and I think learned a lot. And we went around the whole transit loop. I explained to them how it works and how to make a call a ride. And I explained that we have probably an average of 10 call a rides a day that we're busy at. So it's okay to call because people were thinking, well, I don't want to be the only one making a call a ride. Anyway, it was very successful, and I encouraged them to tell their friends how easy it is to ride and to the places we go. So I wanted to say that the trolley season is starting on Saturday. Saturday at 11, the three trolleys will start to run. Saturday it runs from 11 till 6. Saturday 11 till 7. Sunday 11 till 6. And then on the holiday, it's going to run 11 till 6. From then on till Labor Day, the trolleys are going to operate Friday through Monday. So I wanted to invite everyone to come ride the trolleys. You can pick up schedules at the visitor center and at the transit office, and we'll have them at City Hall. Also, Morro Bay Transit is operating from 6:25 to 5:45 p.m. Monday through Friday. The trolleys and the transit bus can stop anywhere that it's safe to do so. You can wave, and the bus driver will stop to pick you up. And also, they'll let you off wherever you ask if it's safe. For call a ride, you call 772-2744. We offer curb-to-curb service between 6:25 a.m. and 5:45 p.m. The ride, call a ride is $2.50 a ride. So call us. The number is showing at 772-2744. You can call between 8 and 10 a.m. Monday through Friday, or call anytime and leave a message. Thank you.
Well, great, Susan. Thanks for coming and letting us know about that. And folks out in Morro Bay, you're watching this. Make sure this is a wonderful thing that you can do. So please, if so inclined, call a ride. And the number is 772-2744. Thanks a lot, Susan. So that, I do believe, looks like it's going to do with public comment. And so we're going to move on to the next item in the agenda, and that's the consent agenda. And we can do this in mass, and we can vote to accept everything if anybody doesn't have an objection. However, I know I do, and I'd like to go item by item if anybody does, and if that's all right with everybody. The first item we have is the approval of minutes of February 16th. We have minutes, and would someone like to accept those? And seconded?
I second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All right,
aye.
So we've approved the minutes. of the last meeting. And next, we're up to director's report.
Excuse me, I'm sorry. Can I get who the first was for that? Okay, thank you.
Richard.
Two different hands.
But and it was Richard, then seconded
by Steve.
And Steve, and then, all right. So moving on to the director's report. I know I have a few items that I'd like to ask about, but Ron, if you have anything you wanted to ask about the director's report, do you have any questions? Are you all right? All right. Bill, did you have any? Bill, you had brought up an interesting point about the water rates. Would you like to talk about that for a second? I thought it was important. I think we maybe, I know someday we're going to be talking about this in the near future, so.
Well, anyway, I noticed on here that we're going to do something about the water rates. And, of course, these are the water rates that were established. It says here 1997. I remember it as 1995, but I guess that's immaterial. But at the present time, there's the break-even point in a bill is between 7 and 8 units. And most of the bills are less than that. And that's based on a fixed cost per meter of $38.52, which was actually a figure I got in the year 2000. And we used that in establishing our procedure at the Water Bill Review Board. But that cost plus the cost of the water. But taking that figure plus the actual cost of the water, and it takes about seven and a half units to break even. And I think there's something that's not a practical way to do it. And also, we've got to make sure that we have an update on that overhead cost, because that's 12 years old now, so it certainly must be more than that now. At least the insurance and labor cost has got to be higher.
Rob, do you see that coming to PWAB or council anytime soon? And should we maybe in consideration of that maybe try to think of a future agenda item?
Yes. Excuse me. Rob Leivick, Public Services Director. Yes, we will be bringing that item probably maybe as soon as your next meeting to PWAB to discuss potential for water rate adjustments and options that we may have to adjust those rates.
I had one quick question on the water rate issue, if I could throw it in before we leave that item. And, Rob, basically, I noticed about 90% of your production is actually coming from the State Water Project, it appears, and about 10% from domestic well or local wells. Does the cost, I'm not familiar with state water cost, does it go up yearly as a general rule, or do they pretty much hold the same acre-foot rate for the city through a period of time?
It pretty much, we have a contract, 25-year contract, so pretty stable rates.
Oh.
90-plus percent of the rate for state water is a fixed cost.
Oh. It's more the cost of
paying down the debt service on the capital construction.
Well, the fact of you trying to raise the rate, it's more of a function of labor costs and other things within the water department.
Labor costs and debt service coverage. We have to maintain a specific ratio for our state water contract.
Oh.
1.25% above, basically need a 25% reserve.
Oh, okay.
On rates.
So in the past, it really wasn't covering.
It really wasn't that. Covering.
Fair enough. I just wanted to get a feel for how it got to where it got, or, you know, why, if it was just labor cost kind of a raise, or if it was other reasons or parameters going on, you know, that was kicking the price up. Thank you.
Richard, do you have any questions about the director's report?
Yes, I do. I have a question about the wastewater plant. Can you give us a figure of what has been expended up to date, not counting hiring the consultant to go before the Coastal Commission?
No, I don't have that number offhand.
Okay, because I got some literature in the mail talked about $700,000 or $800,000, and I don't remember that amount ever being mentioned.
Well, we haven't. I mean, if you're deducting consultant costs, we haven't built anything yet, so we really haven't spent anything on the wastewater plant besides consultant and staff costs.
Okay, so would that be a correct figure for the consultant and staff cost?
Probably approximately. Plus or minus a couple hundred thousand dollars. I can't remember exactly how much we've expended, but we have a $300,000 contract with Dudek Engineering for alternative studies. We have a design engineer contract, which is $2.5 million, and we're probably less than a third of the way into that contract. Hold on just a second. I may have the technology to get that number.
Thank you.
You want to ask another question while I'm in, maybe if one could go to Janine, I can get that number for you.
You better be careful because a lot of the hot seat questions are going to go to you if they exist. But with that in mind, does anybody have any questions for Janine?
Actually, not
about the director's
time.
Report.
I do have a few more for Rob.
Yeah.
If I could just fill some time real quickly, as Susan McDonnell mentioned, the trolley season is going to be starting on Saturday. And I did note in here that we had a route, a flyer attached for your information, but unfortunately it did not make it into the packet. So I will email that to members of the board tomorrow when I get back in the office. And other than that?
I do have one quick question related to what Susan brought up, and it's more for myself and maybe the public. You spoke about some of the timetables being at the visitor center. Is it still located on the Embarcadero? I know there's changes going on with the whole visitor center situation here in Morro Bay. Are they still down there at the boatyard area of the Embarcadero?
Yes.
Oh, okay. That was a freak, yeah.
And also, we have our information for both Morro Bay Transit and Trolley and the Call a Ride on the city's website. And if you go to the city's website and you go to the transit division, there'll be links to that information.
And the only other question I had on the Call a Ride, was there restrictions on that age-wise, or was Call a Ride any rider can actually use it?
Originally, when the city transitioned to the deviated fixed route and with the fixed route and the Call a Ride service, there was some concern that we might be at capacity, so the council did have an age limit set initially, but after about 6 months or so, we came back to them after it was apparent that we had capacity available and that there were individuals who weren't of senior age who needed the service as well. And the council did change that policy to be general public. So any member of the general public can use the call.
Okay, thank you. Service. I'm sometimes when it gets into the subsidized riding, I'm never quite sure. I know there's certain rules and restrictions to some of it based on your funding. So,
I have kind of a carry-on to that. I've noticed around town that we have some new signs around our trolley, Morro Bay Transit stops, and they're very nice. I like how they look, but I don't remember that coming up at PWAB. So was that just something as we figured as we're developing the Morro Bay Transit route, we're going to go out there and put these new signs?
Yes, we actually we received a grant from the Rural Transit Fund to purchase new trolley and transit stop signs as well as route information kiosks. And those were acquired and we finally got them put up. So I think that happened in the last month or so for Morro Bay Transit. And then the trolley stuff went up within the last couple of weeks with the anticipation of the service starting. And we have talked about, we still have some funding left from this grant to purchase some more route information display cases to put up at other areas along the Morro Bay Transit route that aren't specifically designated as a stop, but we have these long stretches like along Piney Way or along the south part of Main Street that you wouldn't necessarily know just walking down the street that there is a transit bus that's coming along until you see it past you. So we have had some discussion of adding some additional information out along the route that wouldn't be a specific time point stop, but it would get a little more visual for people who are out in the street.
And so with that in mind, anybody, if they look at one of those kiosks and looks at the map of where Morro Bay Transit goes, they could walk theoretically along that route, and any time they could flag down somebody if it was permissible for the driver at that time to stop.
Correct.
And they would stop?
Okay. Correct. And the key there is if it's safe for the driver to pull over to pick up the rider and then load the rider into the vehicle. So that's kind of the key. So if somebody's in not quite a safe spot to pull over and the transit bus passes them, it's probably because of that issue. But generally, anywhere along the route, if you turn around and you wave to the driver, make eye contact, you should be able to have them pull over and pick you up.
So that's good for people out in Morro Bay to know that anytime you see the... And will that go for the trolley as well?
I believe we do flag stops as well on the trolley.
So that's good to know in the next 3, 4, 5 months that if you're out there in Morro Bay walking on the Morro Bay Transit route, you can flag down the trolley or the bus. Okay, Rob, how are you doing?
I have a number.
All right, here we go.
And where I got this number was from our wastewater treatment plant webpage, and it was the most recent update from our project manager, Dennis Delzite, and... I have $1,062,000 spent as of the last update report, including about $55,000 to McCabe and Company. Let me get back to the listing of amounts. MWH Design has billed $475,000. I'm rounding to the nearest thousand. Dudek has billed $392,000. And Dennis Delzite, our project manager, has billed $43,000.
And Dudek's mainly doing the appeal to the Coastal Commission, is that correct? Is that their purpose?
They're addressing the Coastal Commission's substantial issues and responding to each of those for us.
All right.
I have some other questions on it.
All right. Well, please go ahead.
Oh, okay. First of all, on the stormwater, you talk about staff as continuing water quality sampling your several outfalls. And this is a little bit my ignorance, Rob, and I'm trying to get a hand. Our outfalls from our storm drain system, are they into the creeks which dump into the bay, or are they actually out in the bay, or they are out in the ocean, you know, along Atascadero State Beach area? I don't know where you actually dump your water to begin with.
All of the above.
Oh,
actually.
Okay. So they do come in from all those.
The storm drain system was developed early on in the city, and you know, dump discharges to you know, the receiving bodies at a variety of locations. Actually, where we're sampling is because there's a total daily maximum load limit on the bay for pathogens.
Mm-hmm.
We are, as part of our stormwater permit, can exceed that pathogen load. So we sample in the mixing zone in the bay near those outfalls.
So you're just taking a sample.
We're taking grab sample.
Because it's submerged or
yes.
Whatever the case may be.
We also do sampling upstream of the city to show that the water that we... what effect that it passing through the city has, whether it is no effect or has an effect on passing through the watershed, because we get run on from county lands onto the city, and we're not responsible for what happens outside of the city limits, yes. More out of self-preservation.
Do you see much in the past pathogen levels? I'm not aware of a lot of grazing going on for most of what's around.
As it's been in a variety of studies, the majority of the pathogens in the bay come from the seeps around Los Osos, where
The effluent from
the septic tanks are leaking in, also from the Choro Valley watershed, where there is a significant amount of agricultural operations upstream.
But not so much the Morro Creek area.
Morro Creek doesn't discharge into the bay. It discharges in it discharges into the larger bay, the Estero Bay,
right?
But not into the enclosed estuary of Morro Bay.
Okay, thank you. And then I do have one more. Let's see, I did that one. And this is the this is merely for my and maybe the our city residents. You're going to be doing the street construction work. It talks on the pavement management plan on the last page. And are these roads actually going to be closed off, or are you leaving a lane open as you're doing the sealing and chip sealing operation? Is it your intent to close those roads down during that time, or is it are you leaving one lane open and they're going to be traffic controlling through it?
We have not yet received our submittals from our contractor on how they propose to proceed for traffic control.
Because the Main Street one looked like one where it'd be kind of a little bit of a...
Well, I have an update. After last night's council meeting, council directed us to, if we could not get the work done on the commercial streets by June the 13th, to postpone those to after Labor Day. It doesn't appear that the contractor can get those done. We have liquidated damages provisions in our contract for if the work wasn't completed by Memorial Day. Obviously, Memorial Day is 2 days away, and they haven't mobilized into town yet. That's not going to happen. We're in the process of negotiating a change order with the contractor, and we let them know that they are potential in incurring liquidated damages, and we're negotiating perhaps some extra free work for in lieu of a monetary settlement.
Yeah, because the roads I saw, the ones east of Piney Way, they really wouldn't affect the tourist traffic or anything else to speak of. But Main Street and Quintana, I could see that being
Main Street, Quintana, and that north section of the Embarcadero, especially Fourth of July weekend, would be a major impact with the events that are held on.
That would be an easy one to route around the other side of the island, though, and, you know, having people work one side and then the other. Because it's all just slurry sealing and chip sealing.
With the exception, well, there will be some dig outs on the streets, prepping them for the slurry sealing. But it's really, Main Street is the only paving operation that we're going to have.
Okay. I appreciate it. Thank you. That's it for me.
All right, Richard, you have any questions? All right. I guess then I'd like to piggyback on what Stephen was talking about. So the Quintana Highway 1 section will be right there by Limos that will be worked on this summer?
Well, Quintana Road runs from...
Oh, no, I know where Quintana Road is, but I'm thinking it says here street construction will start on Main Street between Highway 1 and Quintana.
Or microphone.
As it says here, we'll start soon on the work of Main Street between Highway 1 and Quintana Place. So I'm thinking in my mind, I know that one section that goes into Dynegy between Highway 1 and Quintana. So that's why I bring that up. Is that what? Are we on the same page?
Quintana Place is goes in between the secondhand store and Kitsman's water treatment. So that's that first left-hand turn pocket off of if you're southbound on Main Street. There's two left-hand turn pockets, one to Quintana Road. The more northerly one goes to Quintana Place. So that section was the first section. It's the rough, if you've
No, that's what I'm bringing up, because I know a couple years ago we talked about trying our new patch program right there in that near that section. So I thought maybe we were going to redo that.
That is the area that is proposed to have a dig out and... because what's happening is there's poor subgrade, poor material below the street there that needs to be dug out, replaced with a thicker section of base material, some reinforcing fabric, and then paved back on top of there. We're getting some water in that area underneath the roadway, some groundwater. So it's You know, we get what's known as pumping of the subbase, and it's causing that flex asphalt, which is flexible pavement, to flex a little bit too much there, and causing that pavement failure. So we need to get down and repair the substructure before we pave on top of it.
Great, because that's a very incredibly heavily used road right there.
Yeah, but it's looking like that's not going to happen until
after
Labor Day.
Got it. So, folks, if you think that the roads were going to be fixed right now, they're not. A little bit later.
Residential streets will still occur in the intervening period. So,
and is this in our packet? There wasn't quite an update in here, but I'm sorry to maybe that's what you're bringing up. We have this map about street rehabilitation program.
Yes,
is this what you're bringing
that's
up?
That's the current map for.
And how can, because this is South Morro Bay, that's going to be significantly done, and we're going to do this beginning May 14th. Okay, and then July. So we're going to have some serious road work in the next couple months.
Yes, the actual start date, based on latest communication to the contractor, is obviously not May 14th, because
you'd be half done.
We'd be half done. We would be done with all of our commercial streets if they would have started then. It's the contractor's proposing to come in on June the 4th. They still haven't submitted their required documents that they need to.
Who did the contract let to, Rob?
ISS, International Surfacing Systems, that typically does great work. They do, but it is our understanding that they got a lot of work quite recently, and we're having a difficult time, and they're working as a general. They typically work as a subcontractor to another paving contractor. So,
So with this map, Rob, that I don't know, we don't have it up on the projector, but this is all the work is being done in South Morro Bay, and so my question is, because I didn't see it in the director's report, but I guess it's connected, is this map is only of South Morro Bay. So is this in terms of the larger pavement management plan, and this is just part of that plan that I know we looked at in the last 6 months?
Yes, the pavement management plan sets out a hierarchy for pavement, and the strategy selected in the pavement management plan was pavement preservation. Many of the streets north of Highway 41 are in very poor condition, and doing the less expensive techniques such as seal coating, chip seal, microsurfacing on those streets would be not a good approach. So this first round is a pavement preservation technique. The contract is for about $720,000 this time. There's some additive alternatives, and we haven't selected all those, so it's about $720,000. That's getting us about 5.7 miles of streets. If we were to do conventional grind and overlay, we could probably get that goes for about $400,000 a mile. We could get a couple miles of street. Full reconstruction, which most North Morro Bay streets, we would probably get a mile of street done for that same amount of dollars.
That's totally fine. I understand, because we've been over the pavement management plan. I just know there's some people in north of 41 that will look at this in question. So I just wanted to point out that it's part of the larger plan, pavement management plan, and that maybe someday in the future, if we ever, when we revisit this, if we look at it or go after other funding sources.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. I do want to point out that we still do patching, pothole repairs on all city streets. So,
and that's another good question, because as you're one of the things in the director's report.
We encourage folks to go to the citizen request tracker, and hopefully soon we'll have a new interface up that'll be a little bit easier to use. And allow for not just a one-way communications, so you'll get a response back via email when the work is scheduled, when the work is complete, so that it's not just right now it's kind of a black hole. Not that the work doesn't get done, but it's kind of an unknown because you enter your information, it goes away, and you kind of never know if it, you know, did it get to the right person? Are you sure? I mean, I know it does because, you know, I check up on them quite a bit. But this new interface will have the ability to communicate both directions with the public and the people working on the project.
Ron, did you want to say something? I know you've had experience with this system.
I did get the potholes on my street fixed, and I really appreciate that. Thank you. But are you still going to put an icon where it's easier for people to find rather than digging through five layers before they can actually find what they need to have done?
That is on there. It's on the left-hand link on the main city website.
Been in it recently.
Yeah. Okay. So if you just, it's brought right up to the front page of the city's webpage.
Okay.
So it's citizens' e-requests.
Okay. Reading this, it sounds like you still have to
drill down into it, and maybe I didn't update that link.
No, yeah, I think so, because I do believe I've seen it on the left-hand side.
Yeah.
It does say that.
Because I was reading this, and it was saying the same thing. I was going, when are you going to get that? Okay, so it is done.
Yes, it is
done. Okay, so that makes it much easier for people when they do want to request, go to the front page, and there's an icon there that will direct them?
Yeah, not an icon, just a
button.
I think it says email request, or it says
citizens e-request.
Correct. On the left-hand side, there's a list of several different things, like for agendas, reports, and it's called Citizen E-Request Form, I believe.
Okay. Thank you.
And I think it's up towards the top of the list.
And so I guess this leads me to another question in terms of pavement management index. I notice a lot of times, because I'm out really early in the morning, and I see our street sweeper going around town. And I know we have a contract with this business, and I'm just wondering in terms of the street sweeper going over streets and going over streets that are in poor condition, and with that agitation making the streets worse, are we ever, or when do you kind of surmise, Rob, that we might be talking about the street sweeper services and how to work with that?
Next month. Is we're bringing back the street sweeper contract.
You're clairvoyant.
An update.
I'm telling you. All right. Okay, I'm sorry to belabor this, but I do have another couple questions of the director's report. On page 3 of 4, on collection systems, the last thing, collection systems, section 6 repairs. Could you explain on the bottom of that box, it says collection systems, section 6 repairs, decal construction, and their subcontractors completing this rehabilitation project in the next couple weeks. Is this a lift station down on Quintana?
No, this isn't the lift station. This is the gravity collection system that kind of feeds into that lift station. So I don't know, if you were on South Quintana Road in the last week or so, there was a contractor out there, had a couple of trucks. One was feeding a big fiberglass tube into the pipe, and then they heat it up with pressurized steam. It forms to the inside of the pipe. It's called in situ form, an inversion lining technique that lines the inside of the pipe with fiberglass. Then they run a little camera and cutter down to cut open the laterals. That's what we're doing, is to keep the groundwater from infiltrating into the sewer system. So it was a rehab project for that. So it keeps roots and groundwater from getting in. So that was that section. So that was around basically from the city limits on Quintana, just past the RV park, coming northerly on Quintana, doing some repairs up in the La Loma, Alejandro Moringa neighborhood, up there. And then we did a out-of-section repair up on Coa Street. We had the contractor in town. There was a kind of a bad section up there that we wanted to get lined while we were here. They're also doing manhole interior coating as part of this system upgrade. So they'll be coming in and regrouting with cement grout the inside of the manhole, and then putting an epoxy coating on that that keeps the hydrogen sulfide gas from eating the concrete away and preserves the life of that manhole.
I assume there's clay pipe they're lining, is that correct?
For the most part, clay pipe, yeah.
Thankfully, that's all of my questions for the director's report. That's item A2. Item A3, which is a correspondence with the Morro Bay Citizens Bike Committee. I had one question I thought that I put asterisks by. And I'll read, Mr. Rands reported that negotiations with Dynegy for an easement through the plant in Class 1 have stalled. Dynegy does not want to grant an easement until they cease operations in 2016. Talking about the bicycle plan on the bike path from Main Street through to Lila Kaiser. So do you have an update on this, or?
I have to apologize. Ms. Burlingame was asking me a question during the first part of your comment.
All right, I guess what I'm talking is we got a correspondence from the Morro Bay Citizens Bike Committee, and they're saying Dynegy is saying that they don't want to grant an easement for bicycle down to the Embarcadero from the bike path until 2016. And I know that that had raised a number of people's hopes around town to get to the Embarcadero easier. So is this is just what's going on, or do you have any idea?
Well, as you might have heard in the news, Dynegy has proposed to cease operation at the end of this year, so that date may be sooner rather than later. So we may not have to wait till 2016.
Okay. That's another way to think about it. All right, that's the consent calendar, if anybody else didn't have any other questions. And now we're on to old
business.
Excuse
me, Mr.
Yes,
Chair.
Yes, go ahead.
Could we get an action on the other two items on the consent calendar move to receive and file?
Do we have a motion to accept the consent calendar items? So moved. And we need a second?
I'll second.
And all those in favor?
Aye.
All right. So everybody accepts the consent calendar. Moving on to old business. And this is the update on the transit issues regarding Regional Transit Authority North Coast route changes, the Estero Bay Transit proposal, and fiscal year 2010-11 Transportation Development Act audit. And so, with that up, we're going to go to Janine. Do you want to talk about this?
Yes, thank you. And tonight, as you mentioned, you have before you actually an update on transit issues. A little different than what you were expecting. As of your February meeting, we had the Estero Bay Transit proposal concept for your consideration, and there were some issues or some questions that had come up about the fiscal year 10-11 Transportation Development Act audit with regard to the fare box ratio and the difference between what had been reported in the audit versus what the Council of Governments was kind of anticipating the fare box ratio to be. So this went to the City Council on March 13th, and their direction to staff was to basically work with the Council of Governments on the fare box ratio issue for the audit, and then to bring the Estero Bay Transit concept back to the Public Works Advisory Board for your review and comment to the Council. Subsequent to that meeting, the City received some information from the Regional Transit Authority that they were going to be making a number of changes to their North Coast routes, Route 12, which comes from San Luis Obispo here into Morro Bay, Route 15, which goes from Morro Bay north to San Simeon and back, and then I think it's Route 11 that goes between Los Osos and Morro Bay. And basically, they were making some tweaks to timing for Routes 12 and Routes 15, but the big change, the major change, was along Route 11, which they, I think, now are going to go back to calling it like Route 12. And it's basically restoring hourly connections between Los Osos and Morro Bay, whereas I believe it was last summer they made some route changes along the North Coast to have all of their routes pulsing at City Park at the same time. And then a few months later, the city changed our service to pulse at the same time at City Park. And so one of the things that they had done with the connection from Los Osos to Morro Bay was every other hour, the first hour they're coming into Morro Bay, then they go back to Los Osos, and the opposite hour they were driving out to San Luis Obispo via Los Osos Valley Road and going to Trader Joe's area and then back and then coming back into Morro Bay. So instead of the hourly service that they had had in the past, it was now kind of every other hour service to get connections into Morro Bay and to connect with Route 12 or Route 15 going north or south. So the major change is that is restoring the connection between the two communities. And then shortly after their board meeting, which was May 2nd, we received a letter from the Council of Governments, which is attached in your staff report, that it basically was saying because of the modifications that the RTA is doing to their North Coast routes, which will start on June 10th, that the Estero Bay Transit concept was no longer warranted or needed as those hourly connections had been restored. So they're essentially withdrawing the proposal, and it's no longer being put forward for consideration. So that's one part of the update. Also attached in your staff report is the proposed changes to the RTA North Coast routes. And this was back in at the end of March. And I know the timetables have had some changes made to it, some small modifications in timing. And I believe now that the riders for RTA have been handed out actual timetables that will be starting on June 10th. And they're a little different then, but not majorly different than what's here in the staff report. So if anyone has questions on the specific route tables, they should contact RTA for that. The other item I wanted to kind of update the board on, because there was some questions that had come up, was in regard to the fiscal year 10-11 Transportation Development Act audit in relation to the farebox ratio. And after the February meeting, staff met with the Council of Governments and communicated with our auditor about what were the revenues that were included in for the farebox calculation, what are the requirements coming from the state that are allowable fares or allowable non-fare revenues that could be included. And the major there was a change to the audit, which the city has made and has submitted to the Council of Governments in the last few weeks. And the major change was in relation to parking in lieu funds that are used for the trolley service. And the interpretation from the auditor differed from the interpretation from the Council of Governments. The Council of Governments viewed that as allowable only if the city then turned around and provided free fares for the trolley service. And so it would be a subsidizing of fares for that to be able to use those revenues. The city didn't do that. This auditor had a different argument, but we felt if you pull out the parking in lieu funds, we're still meeting the 10% fare box ratio, so we felt like we didn't really need to argue that point much further. So that issue has been resolved. As I mentioned, the revision to the note with regard to fare box ratio has been made and has been resubmitted to the Council of Governments. So that's pretty much it, other than as far as from, you know, now that we're not going to be furthering viewing the Estero Bay Transit proposal concept, as far as from the local service for Morro Bay Transit, we're just continuing to work with RTA on any route changes that they're making and timing at City Park to make sure that we're providing timely connections and if we need to make adjustments for that. And we're continuing to look at our own service in terms of increasing ridership and lowering operating costs. And so in the new fiscal year budget for 12-13, there's been some adjustments made to the cost allocation plan for overhead based on changes that have been made to the public services department, restructuring of particular duties for primarily myself. But also when we changed to the deviated fixed route, we had fewer vehicles that were being maintained by the Vehicle Maintenance Division, and so there was a small reduction there as well. We're also going to be considering a fare increase for July 1, and that will be coming within the budget, and there will be notices going up in the buses announcing the consideration of that, as well as the addition of 1 hour of vehicle service starting July 1 on the end of the day. Right now, we currently stop at 5:45, so if you work in San Luis Obispo and the last bus that you could take if you're a commuter would be the 4:30 bus to get into get into Morro Bay around 5 o'clock and then pick up Morro Bay Transit to get you back to the north end and the south end. And by the ability of adding that extra hour, someone who does an 8 to 5 or 9 to 5 in San Luis Obispo would now be able then to pick up that service after 5 o'clock here in Morro Bay. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to the board for any questions or comments.
Can I go?
Sir? Yeah, go ahead, Steve.
The first one's on your attachment 3. It's the last page of your staff report. I was noticing the fare box increase for this year was 7% you had down at the bottom. But I noticed your ridership was up 55%. Mm-hmm. I guess my question is, why didn't the fare box increase go up 55%?
We do have, and I might have put it in as a note down on the bottom, we have some requirements placed on us by the Council of Governments to provide either a subsidy or a free ride for the regional pass we honor. So the program is if somebody buys the regional pass, they can ride any fixed route in the county.
So you're honoring
and
tickets?
We're honoring those, and we don't get 100% fare recovery for that. The other one is the senior VIP pass that the City of SLO issues for, I believe it's riders over 80 or 85 years old. And they're provided a free ride. And so we are required to honor that.
And this is new. It's not something that's been going on for years and years?
It is something that's been within the last year, year and a half.
Okay. So that's fair enough.
And right. So that's why you see we've had some large ridership gains, but the fare box side is not having that same gain because
right.
we're having either a partially subsidized or a fully subsidized.
No, I follow where you're coming from. The second question I had real quick was, first of all, in looking at the RTA schedule, I do like it. It seems that they have extended it further into the evening. They've got it every hour on the hour, it appears, and you can get over to Los Osos or San Luis. I think going northerly up 15 up to Cambria, it's a little more sporadic, but from the standpoint of RTA's side of it, it does appear to be covering the city quite well, at least bringing them to City Park. But in reading the Council of Governments letter, I honestly felt like this person was trying to slap the city around a little bit in the verbiage they used in there. Well, and I guess I want to get a feel because I don't know their executive director and where he's going, but he talks about the fare box issue, and he says, no, you can't use that, but you do meet the 10% standard. And so I'm not even sure why he's bringing it up other than a little bit of grandstanding, I felt. But from your engineering, so you're going to work to get Morro Bay Transit to be able to get people over to City Park and try and get that aligned. And is that the second phase of trying to work out the whole transportation issue here in
the city?
That's
part of it. The commuter trips, the connections to RTA have never really been sort of the bread and butter of the local transit system.
Oh, okay.
There is a small portion of that's important, and it's important to be able to provide those connections as easily as possible so that you can encourage more users of it. But the vast majority of the users of our system are really more internal trips.
Oh, okay. So they're not leaving Morro Bay. They're just going somewhere else within Morro Bay.
Correct. But we do have a small portion that do commute out either as commuters going to work, or we do have people that go into SLO for medical trips. So that there is a small portion of that, but the vast majority of the trips are internal, and that's where there's a little difference between during some of the meetings for the transit efficiencies group, the regional service and the COG are looking more for that interconnectivity And we are looking more at locally, what are the needs for the Morro Bay residents? Who are using who's using the service right now, and where are they going? And how can we best utilize the transit dollars that we have to make those connections for those people?
And in that letter from the SLOCOG, they talk about, are you actually losing some funding as a result of the fact that RTA picked up that?
No.
They kind of alluded to the fact that somehow there was 70 grand or something.
That number is not something that the city necessarily agrees with the final amount. We had some disagreements about overhead and how it was allocated, and that was in part of the discussion that you had in February. And prior to that, when we had another iteration of the proposal before you. So they were also working off of numbers from our budget that will not exist in 12-13. So what exactly has been lost as far as the potential for cost savings has not been fully identified.
Oh, okay. So you're comfortable with where you're at with the state funding you'll get as a result of meeting the fare box requirement.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Richard, do you have any questions?
No.
Bill? You all right?
Your microphone?
I thought my mic was on. Okay, basically, you're saying that the dispute that we were having with them has been resolved.
Correct. And okay. And basically, the Council of Governments was, I think they were anticipating that we were not, that we were just reporting for Morro Bay Transit when we were doing a blended fare. And there was a big difference, and they didn't know why that was. And so it happened to come out at the meeting that they were concerned about that. But that issue has been resolved. We are meeting the 10%. We're in compliance. We're not losing any state transit assistance or LTF monies for transit at this point because of that.
And then looking ahead, last questions. On the second page of Mr. DiCarli's letter, he talks about a fare increase. Is this what Morro Bay Transit and you're thinking in terms of our ridership? We just got 10.5%, so we're really close to that. Is that why we're looking at are we looking at raising the fare to, with that in mind, the fare box ratio?
That's part of it, yes. For the Morro Bay Transit component, It's about getting your expenditures down and getting your revenues up. So we had a fare change when we went to the new deviated fixed route. It actually became a lower fare from the demand response, but the call ride side of it was up a little bit. The anticipated breakout for that first year, we were estimating to have more call-a-ride trips, which were at the higher rate than the fixed route trips, which were at a lower rate. And because that didn't play out the way that it was estimated, we have much more fixed route ridership than the call-a-ride trips. That meant our revenue projection was much lower than was anticipated. So part of what we are doing is looking at what are things that we can do to increase the number of riders in their seats. So changing the call-a-ride age to make it general public as opposed to just for seniors only, because we have the capacity available. That can help to get more seats for call-a-ride and higher revenue. Making more timely connections with the regional service at City Park to entice more commute riders to take the local service to get to the RTA service. And fare increases are part of that. The other part with the fare increases to making it in line with the other fixed routes in the county and help to kind of eliminate barriers for riding. If a member of the public wants to travel between communities and there's all different kinds of requirements and rates, it can become frustrating. So part of this is to streamline that as well.
Is this a annual assessment that we have to do at Morro Bay Transit in terms of this fare box ratio?
The fare box ratio, every year the city is required to do a Transportation Development Act audit for the year, and in that it has the fare box ratio as a requirement. So it is looked at by the state year after year, and if we fall below the 10%, that first year that you would fall below is a grace period, and then that second year, if you take some actions and you get above the 10%, you're out of non-compliance. If you fall below that 10% still, then that's the year that you were then penalized, potentially the cost difference or the fare difference between what you actually did and where you needed to be to get to that 10%. But we're not in that at this point.
But they don't give you any allowance for the fact that you have to honor passes that are given out, like those senior VIP and you don't get to count that towards your fare box.
We have not been in a situation to where we have to bring that up to them and see, okay, if we didn't have to honor these, the VIP passes where we get 0% back as far as fares, and the regional where we only get maybe 60% or 75% of our fares back. And that was the difference between us making the 10% or not. We have not been in that situation yet to bring
that up. No, I realize that, but I feel a little bit of an unfairness going on that you're asked to meet this 10% requirement, yet you have to honor free coupons, so to speak. Something totally out of your control, it appears. Is that correct?
At this point, yes. But if it ever got to a situation where the city had fallen just short of the 10%, and because the VIP and the regional passes account for almost a quarter of the ridership, and if that resulted in us falling to a 9.5%, and adding those back in at the full fare rate brings us to over 10%, we would be having discussions with the COG about that. Oh. And that they have the capability of making a waiver, and that would be the argument that you've placed this requirement on us that we have no control over, and that has resulted in us falling below the 10%.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thanks for the update, and I guess we'll see where it goes in the coming months, correct? Okay. There's no actionable item. This is not an actionable item. So we're moving on to our last agenda item on the agenda. It's a request from the Morro Bay Citizen Tree Committee for potential listing of landmark trees. So, and with that up.
Okay, thank you. Rob Leivick, Public Services Director. This item is before you tonight because in October 11, 2010, City Council adopted Ordinance 563 recognizing, adding the recognition of landmark trees to the municipal code, and the requirement for listing of a landmark tree is approval by City Council upon recommendation of the Public Works Advisory Board. The Morro Bay Citizens Tree Committee evaluated trees in and around Morro Bay for their landmark status and developed a list of potential trees, submitted those to the city, and I have attached their listing and then also summarized it in the report. Want to point out that four of the locations were outside the right-of-way and are not applicable for landmark tree status under this section of the code. Locations designated as 1, 3, 12, and 13. Additionally, in the arborist report, the tree number designated as number 15, which I believe is a Monterey pine, was they talked a little bit about that one having some problems with pine pitch canker, and it was a good candidate for strapping or removal. I did not want to recommend a tree that was recommended for removal to be a landmark tree. So we ended up with 15 of the trees that, based on the Citizens Tree Committee analysis of the criteria, meeting the requirements, at least the minimum requirements, and We're passing those on to the Public Works Advisory Board for their review and potential approval. I want to add in, I did a basic fiscal impact, estimating that the ordinance requires proactive maintenance of those trees recognized as landmark trees, not having a good idea of what tree maintenance would cost on them, but looking at kind of an average price for trimming and perhaps some disease treatment at about $400 per year for those landmark trees, on average $4,000 over a 10-year period. By adding those 15 trees would add $6,000 to the annual cost, or would be absorbed within the annual cost of the tree maintenance budget. The tree maintenance budget for the city of Morro Bay is approximately $77,200. About half of that personnel costs, half materials and outside labor costs. So with that, we agree with the 10 locations or 15 trees that have been recommended by the Citizens Tree Committee. Actually, their tree committee is composed of more tree experts than even the city staff can come close to, since we have none and rely upon consultant services for tree evaluation. So we are passing along their recommendation based on their detailed evaluation of each tree location. And I believe there's a representative from the Citizens Tree Committee, Taylor Newton, to answer any questions you may have on specific tree locations. So like I said, there's the their listing, and then also a photograph of each tree location. And I must say, some of the, they took some very good photographs, especially of the cypress trees. They look pretty good in these pictures.
All right, so that concludes my statement. Open it up to the board here?
Yes.
All right. Ron, do you have anything you would like to say to Rob or Taylor? I would think you're probably available for any questions we might have about this.
Yeah, I can stand up here and you can ask me questions.
All right, there we go.
I'd love to talk.
I'm fine at this point.
Bill, do you have it?
Yeah, it looks good to me.
All right. Richard?
Looks fine.
Steven?
Yeah, I have a few questions, and it's probably just because I'm new to this. I assume the Morro Bay Citizens Tree Committee is a group that's been appointed by the City Council. Is that correct?
No, it's a volunteer group of sort of like the Morro Bay Bicycle Advisory Committee.
Oh.
A group of citizens that most of them, I believe, are experts in some form of landscape or plant that have volunteered their time to assist the city. Yeah.
So the ordinance was set up, and then they were created or came together in order to make.
They actually helped us develop the
draft.
This is actually the first landmark tree request that we've received from anybody, and that may be why it's a large number of trees.
And we're being asked to make a recommendation to City Council to approve based on what you have here or
yes.
not. And I guess I don't know if you're asking for that from a quantitative level. Can we afford it versus are these nice trees? And I trust me, I'm not an expert on nice trees. To me, they all look beautiful when you drive around and look at them. Are you looking for us to make a decision based on can the city afford it, or is it a is it a general fund cost? I guess the problem I have, Rob, is I don't know how to say whether yay or nay. If you're bringing in 15 trees and next year you get another list for 15 trees, is this a one-time? Is it a thing you're going to see annually? Is it? I guess I'm trying to find the ground rules in order to make a decision,
okay.
I guess is what I'm asking.
It, The criteria that was set up was not based on, there was no budgetary criteria set up to adopt the tree list. I believe this is a, when we were originally looking at the potential for landmark trees, we're talking somewhere in the neighborhood of, you know, probably 30 or under total trees in the city would be potential for landmark trees. And this is kind of the first cut at those trees. Now, the ordinance does not require any other than the statement about providing proactive maintenance. So, which we try to do on for all trees. We can't get around to all of them. But, you know, City Council did think it was important that we do recognize landmark trees, and perhaps these would be prioritized as a basis of that maintenance would be help our maintenance staff on how to prioritize their dollars. So we're not, this wouldn't result in a request, an increase in budgetary, but a prioritization to where perhaps where the dollars are spent that they have existing.
Oh, okay. One other quick question, because in looking at these, you know, you threw out some because they specifically did not fall within the right of way. And some of them were some that I thought were nicer than other trees when I was looking at through the pictures. I drove around to most of them. I'll be honest, there was a few I couldn't find because I'm not sure I was looking at the right tree. But the like the one in front of the library, it's not on the road right away, I assume, but I thought the library property was city-owned and leased back to the library or the county or something like that. I guess the question I'm asking is, does it have to be within the road right-of-way? Can an easement be given underneath it so the city could maintain it if the landowner is willing to want to grant that easement? In the case of Tidelands Park, I'm not sure who the ownership of the park is, but I assume it's the city also, which was another one I think dropped out of the mix. I guess I was trying to get a feel for, you know, is it a strict thing in the ordinance that says it must be in the road right away?
That is correct. Okay. That this chapter 12.08 only applies to trees within the street right of way.
Oh, okay.
I think there may be some future the potential for, I believe, one of the goals of the Citizens Tree Committee, I'm going to speak for them, that goals of Citizens Tree Committee is to have the ability to declare landmark trees regardless of if they're on private or public property. And there's nothing prohibited a citizen from caring for a tree on their property like a landmark tree.
No, I follow that. And to me, I'm along with my, you know, members here. I think it's great. First of all, I think there's some beautiful trees in this town, and it's well worth trying to protect. I guess we're going to leave it to the city council to decide whether you could truly afford to do it based on the numbers coming in. But along with them, I think it's a noble plan. I think there's some really nice trees out there. And hopefully these will, like you said, it'll be more of a proactive. I assume you don't have to keep them alive as a landmark tree. If they do get disease, that you have to, you know, throw hundreds of thousands of dollars trying to save a tree or something like that.
No, the ordinance doesn't add any requirements for, we would treat a hazard tree even if it
you
were
do
a
your
landmark.
Best.
We'll do our best to maintain those. We'll probably, you know, rely on the volunteer tree committee to, you know, help us out in inspections and make sure that we are doing our best on these landmark trees. So I see it that the cost is more, and I probably could have expanded this fiscal impact statement. It's more of a way to prioritize those dollars rather than request additional dollars.
Well, I'd agree with your staff report then, because if the ordinance says you can't do it unless it's in the right of way, I would drop the trees that aren't. And as far as that disease tree, I think you're better off getting a disease tree out of the mix anyway, because they have a tendency to disease other trees. And for that reason, I can stand by the staff report and make a recommendation.
I had a few questions for you there, Taylor, and okay. Rob, you might be able to...
Trees is not in the right-of-way, and I still really want it to be a landmark tree, so I'll continue to do that personally to develop that, but anybody in our city could do the same thing as what I'm doing with that chosen tree. And so what we did with the tree committee is we saw nobody doing that besides me and that one tree that I'm kind of beating against a wall with, and we came up with a large list of trees that we thought would be good examples of trees that could be heritage or landmark trees. By no means did we think that all of the trees on the list would become landmark trees. It was more of, let's get this ball rolling and show people what a landmark tree is, what we as the tree committee of educated arborists, biologists, landscapers would classify as landmark trees according to this ordinance. And you have a large list, and I think that you have examples of all the different trees in the city that could be considered landmark trees for whatever certain reason.
If I can piggyback on what you say, so somebody theoretically could find that list of trees that you've compiled in the last few years and ask for a tree on that list to be designated?
You could go off of my list, or you could go down the street and say, I want that tree to be a landmark tree, and go into the public works office and or write Rob an email and get it nominated. You could also write Noah Smuckler or me on the tree committee, and those would be the routes to nominate a tree.
And likewise, reading through this, if a tree is cut down here in Morro Bay for whatever reason, Rob and Taylor, I'm thinking specifically on Bernardo between Morro Bay Boulevard and Pacific. There was three trees cut down near the dentist office, Trubeau's, and the apartments right there on the corner. That would be on the west corner. And those trees haven't been replaced. So is that a city issue, Public Works, that someone would approach Public Works to plant new trees there because there's still stumps there that they haven't been ground out? Or is that a matter of coming to the volunteer tree committee and then you guys send a recommendation?
No, it is a city issue. Our maintenance section out of Reckon Parks is working on that. I think they still have the contractor still needs to come back and grind out those stumps. On Bernardo, we're going to add some sidewalk there, so we're coordinating with the general engineering contractor.
So the city removed them.
Yes.
You had it done. It
yes.
wasn't. Okay.
And then the city plants the trees, and then a little bit later, if they're designated as heritage or landmark trees, then you get involved.
The designation of landmark tree status does not necessarily need to go through Taylor or the Citizens Tree Committee. They can come directly to the city and request designation of the on landmark tree status. You know, looking at the criteria, you may need some expertise in, you know, trees. You know, you might want to attend a Citizens Tree Committee, volunteer for the Citizens Tree Committee, and work at it that way.
One quick question I had for you, Taylor, is I assume based on the trees that I saw, you said there was many different styles of trees, and we're talking about maintenance, and at the end of the day for Public Works, money is always the issue. I assume something like a eucalyptus is a lot harder to maintain than, say, those canary palms or something like that. Is that a fair assumption based on, you know, one tree's kind of dirty or, you know?
You can't go and cut down the eucalyptus just because it's big.
Right.
You have to maintain it. And so the idea with the landmark tree ordinance is that we do have certain trees in the city that everybody can agree are valuable trees for the city. Now, some of those trees are going to be that we could designate as landmark trees are going to be easier to maintain than others, but regular maintenance for long-term life will decrease your cost in the long term of maintaining that tree, because you will get to a point where a tree has to be maintained, and it has been maintained for years, and then the cost will be quite extravagant.
You know, Taylor, that's a good point. You're right. They're all city trees already, and the maintenance is already incumbent on the city to take care of. So you answered my question. Thank you very much.
All right, Ron.
yeah, when you said that a citizen can come and request a tree be tagged as a landmark tree, will that list come back to us periodically for sending forward to the city council, or will you be making that determination?
No, the ordinance requires that before it goes to City Council, that it comes to the Public Works Advisory Board for their recommendations to City Council. So
okay.
Each tree, we could bring them back. I would suggest not waiting too long, in between the submittal of, not wait until we get 5 or 10 of them. Just happens we got a bunch of them all at one time, so you wouldn't necessarily see a list of 15 or 20 trees each time. You might see them trickle in one or two at a time.
Okay. Well, that's basically what I was asking. Thank you.
I had a note to one thing that I would like to also clarify is that when we wrote the draft for the tree ordinance, we used San Luis Obispo's Heritage Tree Program as an example. And for that city, which has had this program for a while, they only had like 20 to 30 trees that had made it to that list. So Morro Bay has less trees than San Luis Obispo. So really, we shouldn't have this gargantuan list of landmark trees. We should really look at trees like all these trees on this list and say, what trees do we really want to keep for a long term and plan for them to be here for a long term? And at the same time, how do they represent our heritage? And that's what the classification on that ordinance kind of delineates is these are the different values that the tree committee and council and PWEB agreed would designate a landmark tree.
Okay. Well, and now, before we end this section, Taylor, if someone wants to come to the tree committee and either have additional trees added onto the list of cities, how could they do that so people can know?
So as an example, I have a tree at St. Timothy's that I really want to be a landmark tree for multiple reasons. I think I have all these reasons why I think it's a heritage tree. So what I did is I contacted Rob Liveck by email and asked him what I needed to do to nominate it as a landmark tree. He told me what information he needed, and I gave him that information. Then he gave me his response, and it wasn't in the right-of-way, so it wouldn't be applicable. But that would be the same process that anybody would do. If you have a tree that means a lot to you because you have all these stories from your family, those are really good reasons for it to be a heritage tree. You would write Rob the email.
Meeting is.
That would be a great spot to talk about it and figure things out.
Okay, well, thanks a lot for coming and commenting. And then I don't think this is an actionable item. We're just going to...
Yes, it is, please.
Oh, it is? Okay. So with these, so we need a motion to forward this recommendation for these 10 tree locations to the City Council.
I'd like to make the motion to approve the recommendation of the staff report by Rob Levick and forward it to the City Council.
All right. And we have a second. And all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And motion carries, and the recommendation goes to City Council. Thank you very much, Rob, for presenting that, and Taylor for coming. And so that does it for new business. Future agenda items. I did have a question about the street sweeper, but Rob, you said that we were going to be talking about that at our next meeting.
Yes, we'll have a representative from the maintenance division that will be presenting what our existing contract is, what our expectations are, and what the ongoing satisfaction level is with the current street sweeper contract.
Well, one thing I was going to ask Rob is, I see Janine already left, but are they going to come back with a revised time schedule on the Morro Bay Transit routes? Is that going to come back before us again, or are they just going to try and meld it in with what's going on with RTA?
We're going to work with RTA and get the best schedule that we can to coincide with theirs.
I mean, they've set theirs. I think now it's a matter of Morro Bay Transit somehow matching.
I think we're meeting all of their time points for the south. Kind of this, it's only the north, going north that, and I don't know that we can.
So we don't need to come, it doesn't.
No, it does not need to come back.
I have an item.
Yeah, go ahead, Bill.
I'd like to bring up something about the bikes on Coleman Drive. Parallel to the Class A or Class 1 bike path the city built at substantial expense. The road is narrow there. It's not wide enough for two cars plus some bikes to pass, yet you consistently see bikes on that section. And it'd be simple to just letter in the street where the bike path starts, just bikes take bike path both ways.
I guess one thing we could do is, I don't know, Rob, would that be sending to the Mile Bay Bike Committee first before we go to the Traffic Committee?
I can talk to the Morro Bay Bike Committee and perhaps bring back an informational item on this about what we could possibly do out there on the street to make it safer for both bikes and cars.
I'm not sure with the California Vehicle Code you could preclude bikes from being on the road since it's a public road that you're driving on. I feel your pain, Bill. I really do, but
That's why I suggest you can just put lettering on the street. Bikes take bike path in that arrow pointing west.
I think by state law.
You're not, the cops aren't going to arrest them.
Plan, and we want to get that to all the advisory bodies for as much public input as possible. So we'll be bringing that back next meeting. It'll also be going to the Harbor Advisory Board's meeting in June. So we'll be looking at a concept plan for revisions to the Rock parking lot area.
Are you looking to pave it?
Potentially. Oh. That's one of the recommendations, at least a portion of it.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, so we have two items on the agenda. Anybody else have any idea that you'd like to see about getting them put on that agenda? No? Okay, and so with that, we have an adjournment, and our next meeting is going to be Thursday, June 21st at 6 p.m., and everybody at home, thanks for watching, and we'll see you then.